good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Here, this is for you. You can sit anywhere. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Okay. So much sugar. Yes. Thank you. It's good to see you, that's for sure. Very nice to see people. Well, good morning, everybody, both on Zoom and here. We're going to try. This is a little hard to balance, but I'll do my best, especially with the screen share, but we'll try. So today we are actually going to be starting a new parsha. Because we finished the Chet HaEgel, that was last year, the sin of the golden calf. Then we moved on to Chumash VaYikra. And I said in Chumash VaYikra, we're not going to just do the whole thing because a lot of it is very technical and can be a bit tedious, especially a once a week class. So we went through the beginning, we gave a bit of an overview on Karbanos, on the sacrifices. Now we are going to move on to, and then we did the story of Aaron's two sons. Do you remember that was like the last thing that we went into in depth? And now we are going to start with a new parasha, Parashas Kedoshim. Parashas Kedoshim is a parasha which you can do on its own. It's almost the middle of the entire Chumash. It's a very interesting parasha in the sense that it is not a story. Chumash VaYikra is not a Chumash of stories. It's a Chumash of mitzvahs. But what's beautiful about Parashas Kedoshim and what's unique about it is that it's one of the most dense parshias with mitzvahs. What does that mean? I think it's about 64 psukim. The whole parasha is only 64 psukim. But in 64 psukim, there are 51 mitzvahs. So that's quite saturated with mitzvahs. There are parshias with more mitzvahs. I think Ki Seitze has more, and there's a few others, but this is the most in the least amount of psukim. So it's quite a beautiful. So every pasuk has at least one mitzvah. Some have even two in one pasuk. So it's quite an amazing parsha. So what we're going to do is we're going to see today more of a general idea from the first pasuk, which will set the tone for the parsha. And also what's very interesting about Parashas Kedoshim is that there's such a variety of mitzvahs, different types of mitzvahs. That's what makes it also very beautiful. Good morning. So there are some mitzvahs between man and Hashem, and there are mitzvahs between man and man. And that's also what makes it beautiful. One of the most famous psukim in Parashas Kedoshim is one of the most famous psukim in the Torah, V'yahavta l'reacha kamecha. That's in Parashas Kedoshim. So we're going to get to that. That's not today. That's in the middle of the parsha. But we'll see all the different kinds. So let's see today what we're going to do. So now we'll just begin with the beginning, with reading the first two psukim, or the first three psukim, and we'll see what the parsha, how it begins and how it sets, so to speak, the tone for the parsha. Okay. So this is Parashas Kedoshim. In the art scroll Rashi Chumash, you can see it's on page 226. I don't have the other Chumash, so I don't know the page, but any Chumash you use, it's Parashas Kedoshim. Okay. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Leimer, and Hashem spoke to Moshe saying, Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael, speak to the entire assembly of the children of Israel, v'amarta aleihem, and say to them, Kedoshim tihiyu, you shall be holy, ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokeichem. For holy am I, Hashem your God. Now this is a famous pasuk, and we do have this idea of being holy other times in the Chumash. Quite often we do have it, but this is the place that it's most famous for. And here, what's unique over here, it's like its own command. It's like Hashem is telling us, be holy. Doesn't tell us what that means. What does it mean to be holy? This is a funny, it's an interesting idea. We just take it for granted. We think of, what comes to mind for me is when you talk about holy, what do we call holy most? Like, what's the word that we use with holy a lot of times? Like, most common, what do we say? We even make the bracha. We say, Lahadrit ner, shel Shabbos, kodesh, right? We say, holy Shabbos. Shabbos is a holy day. You know, that's how we associate holiness. Another day associated with holiness, I think even more than Shabbos, is Yom Kippur. Exactly. That's the holiest day of the year. So we have Shabbos, we have Yom Kippur. That's holiness and time. What do we call holy when we think of people? What would we refer to as holy with people?
God.
Oh, exactly. You think of the holy people are the Kohanim, and they had to remain holy. It's not only that they were designated as holy, but they even have certain laws that they have to keep to make sure they stay holy. And what is some, like some of them might be, I don't know, you know what's like different for a Kohen? It's not easy to be a Kohen.
So,
exactly right, exactly right. So the cemetery is a problem. There's many issues with that, with going near graves. Lately I heard, you know, they're in El Al, they had this thing where they don't have
bodies,
yes, and they have a special way of doing it so that the Kohanim, it won't be a problem. And there's a lot of issues, even flying over cemeteries. There's a lot of issues that people don't even realize, going into a hospital when there's a morgue. We don't even think of it, but there's a lot of issues that got, but why? To retain and to keep their special status of holy. So holiness, when we think of holiness, in a sense, what comes, how do you keep something holy? Like, what's the process, almost? What must you do?
Keep Shabbat.
Okay, good, excellent. Yeah, keep Shabbat. That's the way we keep holy. But there's a separation. There's something that we have to keep away from to keep holy. That's like automatically, that's what we think of. We think of there's something we have to either refrain from doing, or a place we have to stay far away from, or people that we have to stay away from, or a situation. So there's something about holiness which does have to do with the separation. Now, Shabbos is a big one with separation. How do we know that Shabbos is very connected to separation? What's Shabbos and separation? The big thing. Okay, so we separate from the week. Where do we see that? It's funny, even more than the beginning of Shabbos, where do we mark it?
At the end.
What is that? We say, we call it Havdalah. Havdalah is separation. It's very interesting. So there, what we're marking is that we're going from a holy space to a not holy space, which is very interesting. So even the moving out of the holiness is marked. So it's quite fascinating. So it's really quite a marked thing. So holiness, obviously, we can already see a little bit. It has something to do with a separation, with a uniqueness, with something where we have to refrain, so we can see a little bit of an inkling of what we're getting to. We're gonna get more into it. I just wanna show one more thing I wanna show you. I mean, there's many things to note in this pasuk, and we're gonna see it. See, we haven't done that much chumash, and we had a bit of a break, but there's something very unique in this parash, in this pasuk, when it tells us that Moshe, okay, Hashem spoke to Moshe, we know that's the usual, and then Moshe has to pass it on, every mitzvah, to the Jewish people. Do you know, how does it usually say when it talks about Moshe speaking to the Jewish people? What's like one of the common ways it would say? That's right, Sylvia. Vayidaber Moshe el b'nei Yisrael, or daber el b'nei Yisrael. Speak to the children of Israel. Do you see something different here? There's something different. Look what it said, we just read. Okay, well, first Hashem spoke to Moshe, and then in the next pasuk, what does it say? Who did Moshe speak to?
Adas.
Oh, El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael. This is a very unique thing. And if you look in the translation, to the entire assembly of the children of Israel. This is very unique here. Okay, and this is very specific. We're going to see why. Okay, the other thing here is, it says Daber, and then it says V'amarta. Do you see? So there's a double. Speak and speak. Everything, we just have it all the time, but Hashgacha Pratis is beyond. We're learning Parashas Kedoshim just because that's where we're up to. But this week's Parasha in Chumash that we're going to be reading is Yisra. There is a Vayidaber and Amar in Yisra. Where do we have that in Yisra? Do you remember? It's very interesting. Well, the Aseres HaDibrois are Vayidaber. They're Dibrois, right? They're 10 utterances that Hashem said in the word Vayidaber. But when it tells Moshe Rabbeinu that he's going to speak to the Jewish people, like one of the things it says over there, Kai Soimar L'Beis Yaakov, V'Sagid L'Vnei Yisrael. So you shall speak to the house of Jacob and say to the Jewish people. So the word is Tagid, but also we have the word Dibrois. So we have Daber. So we also have Emar, Tagid and Vayidaber, also by the Ten Commandments, which is interesting because, and as I say, I'm only going to mention it now because it's this week and I want to get to that. But what's fascinating is that the commentaries tell us that Parshas Kedoshim is quite a unique Parsha in that it contains all of the Ten Commandments. just like the Ten. Not in the same way, exactly, not in the same order, but it contains them and it gives us some new detail about them, either because of the way they're positioned here or because what it comes before, what it comes after, or some word that we learn something new. But all of the Aseres HaDibres are in Parshas Kedoshim, happens to be, and that's this week's Parsha in Chumash, which is actually interesting. So here we have the same thing, Daber V'Amarta. What is the word Daber in Hebrew? Does anybody know the difference between Daber and Emar? Yeah, so they both mean speak, Rona, but there's some difference.
Is Amarta like say?
Okay, so they both can have a past and a... Yeah, but there is...
Daber is directly to the people.
Okay, I know it sounds like it, it does. It explains that the word Amar, Amira, is a softer language. So when you're speaking softly or when you're just saying something casually, Daber is more when you would have a command and it's harsher, it's stronger. That's why it's Vayidaber Hashem El Melech, he's giving a command almost. So that's the difference. And we have that with the giving of the Torah, because the truth is the Torah is given in both forms. With the Torah, we have the idea that it says, that Moshe Hashem says, speak to the woman using the, if you want to say, the word Emar, softly. To the men, they use the word Tagid or Vayidaber, same thing. So stronger, harsher. One of the things that's explained is because Vayidaber is more all of the things that you're forbidden from doing, and Emar is all the beautiful things, like draw them in with the warmth. So it's very fascinating. There's that difference, but here we have it as well. Okay, and then we say Kedoshim, to you, you should be holy. What? It's very interesting. It doesn't just say to be holy. What does it say after? Ki Kodeshani. What does that mean? Because I am holy. Well, we know Hashem is holy, obviously. But what does that have to do with us? It's such an interesting thing. So what does it sound like it's saying?
In the image of Hashem. We created in the image
of Hashem. That's right. That's so interesting. So we are created in the image of Hashem, and therefore we can model him, right, you would say. But it's interesting. It almost sounds like it's a reason. Be holy because I'm holy. That's why you should be holy. It's interesting. Okay, I just want to read one or two more psukim, and then we're going to get into the depth to understand what's really happening over here. And then we see it says in the next pasuk, so you'll see this will connect us to the Ten Commandments. Right away it says in pasuk Gimel, Ish imay va'aviv tirau, every man shall fear his mother and his father. See, interesting. Very different to the Aseres HaDibreis. How does it say it in the Ten Commandments? Oh, kaved. And who does it... Excellent honor. And who does it say first? The father. Here it says fear. And which word does it use? The mother. Very interesting. Okay.
And so the other time, I can't remember the parsha where the Aseret
Dibrot
appears again.
Is it... In Vetchanan. It's the same, kaved, it's the same, kaved es avicha.
Is it the mother first?
No. That's talking both the same. Only over here we have a difference. Here's where we have the mother first, in this parsha. And it's very specific. We're going to learn that more next week, but just to see, look at this pasuk. So that's the first part, that you shall fear your father, your mother and your father. And then it says, ve'es shapsoisai tishmayru, and you shall observe my Shabbos. And the next page says, I think that's the end of the pasuk actually, but let me just make sure. No. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, I am Hashem your God. Interesting. One pasuk, two different mitzvahs. The mitzvah of honoring fearing in this case your parents, but it's revering, it's also honoring, and the mitzvah of Shabbos. So interesting how it comes in one pasuk. We're going to see next week why, but let's see just one more pasuk just to see how it's so interesting how it connects. In pasuk Dalet it says, Al tifnu el, do not turn to ha'elilim, to the idols. That's on page 3. Ve'elekei masecha loisasu lachem, and you shall not make for yourselves molten gods. Ani Hashem elekeichem, for I am Hashem your God. Okay, that's all for now. So you see, that's also like the second of the Ten Commandments, right? Loisasu lachem. The first one says, I am Hashem your God. And the second one says, you shall not make have any other gods. So you see already you have three of the Ten Commandments right away in the first three psukim of this week's parsha, which is quite interesting, obviously in a different order, and we will learn about that. But I want to come back to the first pasuk, because, second pasuk actually to be exact, because we have to understand what this holiness is. So looking at page one, because I want to just see first Rashi. Rashi says like this, because he right away comments about the difference, as we highlighted before, that there's a very big difference between the way this parasha starts to other parashas. Daber el kol adas b'nei Yisrael. So this is on page one, in the middle of the Rashi. It says a two there, and Rashi says, Milamed shenemra parasha zu b'hakel. It teaches us that this portion of the Torah was said in a state of hakel. Hakel is what we know as an entire assembly of Israel. Why? Because the majority of the essentials of the Torah depend upon it. Now, what does this mean that this is said behakel? This is an interesting thing. So before, I just want to show you, go to page number four. Everybody, I'll show you something interesting and then we'll analyze what's happening here. So on page number four, I have for you a Rashi, which is actually from Parshas Mishpatim. There's a reason, because here it will describe the normal way, the usual way, that Moshe Rabbeinu imparted the Torah to the Jewish people. What was the usual way? Because we said this is different. Here it says, El Kol Adas, to the entire assembly. Usually it doesn't say that. What was the usual procedure? And this is a fascinating thing, so I'll just show you here. It says like this, Tanu Rabbanan. So our rabbis have taught us, it's on page four, the rabbis have taught in a braisa, Ketzad Seder HaMishnah, what was the order of the teaching when Moshe taught Israel? How did he do it? So, I just want to see one thing here, so sorry. I can maybe make this smaller and then, okay, good. Okay, so what was the order of the teaching? So it says, Moshe HaYallah made me piagvura. Moshe, we know he would learn it directly from the mouth of Hashem. And then, Nichnas Aaron, Aaron would enter. Shanalai Moshe Pirkei. Moshe would teach him his chapter. Then, Nistalek Aaron, V'yoshav Lai L'smol Moshe. So, when Moshe was teaching Aaron, obviously Aaron would be sitting right in front of him. You know, they would have a direct conversation, a direct communication, and Moshe would teach it first exclusively to Aaron. Then Aaron would move, and he would sit down, and it says, on the left side of Moshe, and then Nichnisu Banov, then Aaron's sons would enter, Shana Lahem Moshe Pirka, Moshe would teach them their chapter, Nistalku Haim, they would depart from Moshe, but it didn't mean they left the room. They would just depart from being directly in front of Moshe, and they would sit down, Yoshev, Elazar liyamin Moshe, v'itamar lismol Aaron. Elazar would sit on the right side of Moshe, and Itamar, the other son of Aaron, would sit on the left side of Aaron. So you have Elazar, Moshe, Aaron, and Itamar, all in a row. Then what would happen then? So this is the second time that Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating it. Then who would come in? Nichnesus Kanim. The elders would enter. Shana lehem Moshe, Pirka Moshe would teach them their chapter. Nistalkus Kanim, and then the Kanim again. They would depart, and they would Yoshvu Litzdodim, they would sit along the sides, and then would come in Nichnesu Kol Ha'am. All the rest of the people would enter. Shana lehem Moshe, Pirka Moshe would teach them their chapter. Nimtza biyad kol ha'am. So what do we draw from this? So the entire nation had one lesson in the chapter, meaning to say that they heard it once, the regular masses of the people. But interestingly, the zakenim, the elders, heard it twice. The children of Aaron, Shloisha, they heard it three times. And Aaron heard it four times. Such an interesting procedure. It's not the usual how we would imagine. Interesting. Aaron had to hear everything Moshe taught four times. But the average person in the street, who we would think would be a little slower, he only got to hear it one time from Moshe. Fascinating thing that happened there. So they would all have to hear it again. So Aaron heard it, Moshe repeat it, Aaron's sons also, and the Kenan, but the rest of the Bnei. So that's how the usual way. Here, what are we saying? This was different. This parsha, this whole parsha's Kedoshim, was done in an entire different way. Who comes in? Everybody together. The entire Jewish nation together hear it one time directly from Moshe. Aaron, his sons, the Zkenim, everybody, all together. Why? Such an interesting thing. Okay, so this is a big question. So let's see. We're going to go back in pages, but just go to page number 5. So I want to show you something.
I just
nice.
Want to know,
sure.
where were they?
I said amazing. They say, Sylvia, it's a good question. There is somewhere a thing about it being a miracle, but
yes.
They maybe were outside. They kept social distancing. I don't know. But but I don't know. They somehow managed to yeah, it's an incredible, incredible thing. Especially the bigger question is really when it was Hakel, because then you have men, women, children. It's like, whoa, that's massive. And not only that, imagine being able to hear Moshe. I don't know. I know. It's a miracle. It's a miracle. Yes, no. It must have been a miracle that everybody was able to hear him. Yeah, it's incredible. And of all people, think about Moshe, the one with the speech impediment. It's quite an amazing thing. Unbelievable.
And also, what occurs to me is this is like the foundation of all education.
That's right.
Repetition.
Exactly, Sylvie, exactly right, 100%. And yet we'll see it's a slightly different thing, because you would think repetition would be for the students who need more or a little bit slower. But it's here we have a bit of the opposite. So we'll see in a minute how
people with hard of hearing.
Maybe they got front seats, Rona. That's it. The front seats. But the truth is they said they were all healed at Matan Torah, so nobody was hard of hearing, hopefully. Okay, so let's see what this is page number 5. I have here a quote from two very, very famous from one very famous explanation on Rashi. His name is Rabbi Leo Mizrahi, and he explains Rashi, and he tells us something very beautiful. So he says, first of all, he comments on what we've just read. He says in Parashas Kisisa, Mikol Makim Lo Hayu Kulam Yachad Ba'Hakel Echad, right? Everybody wasn't together. Kat achar kat. They would enter group after group. Aval kan shalay nemar darbel bnei Yisrael. But here we see it doesn't say the usual speak to the Jewish people, kishara parashis, like the rest, like all the other parashis. Ella el kol adas bnei Yisrael. Rather, it says to the entire congregation. Lamadnu shayu kulam bahakel lefanav. Teaches us that they were all there together, united in a group. V'oz nemra lahem, and then he spoke to them. And then he asks, why? Why is this different? V'tzarech liyaz kulam yachad. They all had to be together. That's the second paragraph, see on page 5. She'im yipol iktsosom shum safek b'halacha. Just in case one of them would have had a doubt in the halacha, in other words, they might have not understood it 100%. Yehiyu ha'acherin meshivim lahem. Then the others could answer them. In other words, the other ones could resolve it for them and say, no, don't you remember? This is what Moshe said. This is what it means. Loi kach v'kach amar. Oh, so he says like this. Sorry. Okay. So he says, loi kach v'kach amar b'fneichem. He didn't say it this way. That's right, if they didn't understand something and they might have misunderstood. Aval im hayu nichnasim kat achar kat. But what would happen if they would enter group after group? Lo hayu yichaylim anshe hakat achas, lo hoshiv anshe hakat acheres. The members of one group would not be able to say to the members of the other group, like kach v'kach amar lachem. He didn't say it like that. Why? Mipnei shehayu omrim lahem, because they could reply, lo yomar lanu kazeh, you didn't hear. So in other words, if Aaron, who heard it directly from Moshe first, only on his own, and then somebody else says, no, I heard it like this, Aaron could say, no, I heard it like this. You don't know, because I was there alone with Moshe, right? So there would be perhaps a little bit of a difference in the way they would understand things, especially we know that when somebody repeats something, it's never exact, right? Even though it's Torah, so I'm sure it was pretty much exact, but the inflection, whatever it may be. And people hear things differently. That's just how it is. It's very interesting, I must say. I find that often. You can say the same thing to two people, and they walk away, and you could think it's too, I don't know, it's quite interesting. But over here we see that if it's separate groups, which was the norm actually, and we'll see soon why, But it's a problem because then you can have people saying, no, I heard it like this. Somebody says, no, I heard it like that. It's not this way. So he says, V'gam yitachim lemesh perish b'hakel. So that's why we wanted them all together. That's what the Mizrahi is saying. Because obviously, as Rashi said, most of the, oh, I don't know if we read that part of Rashi, did we? Yeah, because most of Torah is dependent on this. I don't know if we read that. That this parsha is such a, as we said, all the Ten Commandments are in it, and we are learning such fundamental mitzvahs. They wanted to make sure that everybody heard it together in exactly the same format. Exactly the same form. There could be no difference of opinion. This is what Moshe meant. That's what Moshe meant. It was very, very important, and the language Rashi uses is that Rav Gufe HaTorah Tluyin Ba, that much of the, so to speak, the body of the Torah is dependent upon it. It is such a main part of Torah. Okay, then he says something else interesting. When you talk about Hakel, who is Hakel? So we just said it, but we don't know for sure, but until the Mefarshim tell us, what does it mean? The Gam Yitachim Loimar Sheperish B'Hakel Anoshim V'Noshim V'Taf. When we're talking about everybody together, we don't just mean Moshe, Aaron, the Zkenim, and the Bnei Yisrael, but we mean also the woman and the children. And that's not the usual. They don't usually hear it directly from Moshe. How do we know that Hakel? Because it says by Hakel, Ha'anoshim v'hanoshim v'hataf, men, women, and children. V'nosan ha'tam, why does Hakel have to be done everybody together, men, women, and children? L'man yishmu, so that they should hear. L'man yilmadu, so that they should learn. V'yiru es Hashem, and they will fear God. U'mipnei sh'rayv gufei Torah tluyin ba, and since much of the Torah is dependent on it, which means these are such fundamental, important halachas, Siva liyos b'hakel, therefore they were commanded that it should be done with everybody together. L'man yishmu, l'man yilmudu, so that everybody should hear and everybody should learn. Masha ein kein b'shar parshias, which is not the case with all of the other parshias, shalai nemru ella la'anoshim bilvad, which were only said to the men. This is a very interesting thing, and we're going to see this concept soon repeated a little bit more, but a fascinating and beautiful thing we see here, that this was heard directly from Moshe to everybody, to the men, the women, and the children, this parsha. So obviously, again, it sets the tone that this is a unique parsha, and obviously a very, very important one. That's what it helps us understand. Now, just to understand one thing, just because we said, very interesting, that they shouldn't be able to argue, right? Everybody should hear it together, so one person shouldn't say, no, he meant this, the other person said, no, I heard that, and then they won't be able to argue, because then, well, how do you know what you heard? I wasn't there. So then the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks an interesting question. If that's the case, why does the rest of the Torah, why is that taught in groups? Shouldn't everything be taught this way, right, to avoid that? So he says a very powerful thing. He says two things, very interesting. Two insights he gives. He says like this, on the one hand, and this is a very beautiful thing with Torah, you know, talk about education. There's so many parts, but Torah has a very big emphasis on respect and honor of the leaders of the people. There is a hierarchy. We're not all equal. That's not how Torah views, right? So there are leaders. There's Moshe, there's Aaron, there's the Zkenim. And the people have to realize that Aaron is more special than me. So they look up to him, so they have who to respect, so they have who to learn from. This is such an important thing. And in order to give respect to Aaron, he comes in first. And he learns it first on his own. To give respect to Aaron's sons, they get second place. The Zkenim get third place. And then the Jewish people are allowed to enter only afterwards. So that's one thing the Aruch Chaim says. But then the Aruch Chaim also explains, I just want to see, a very other interesting thing about the concept of not doing it all together. Let me find it. Here. Okay. He says, because a very interesting thing that would happen. Fascinating thing. If everybody learns it together, what that might make you feel is that you don't need to bounce it off each other. They might not review it as much. But because Aaron came in first and he heard it four times, what will happen after Moshe finishes his shiur is that a lot of people will go over to Aaron and say, what did you hear? What did Moshe tell you? Let me make sure that I understood it correctly. So that gives people a lot more practice and a lot more internalization. It's a very interesting thing. In a sense, that's also part of education, to give children that feeling that it's almost like you're teasing, so that they feel that they want to learn it again, they want to review it. It's a tease almost, where they say, wow, he's the lucky one, he got to hear it so many times, maybe he heard something deeper than I did, let me go over and see what he heard, let me make sure I understood it correctly. If they would have all sat together, people wouldn't feel that need. So that's what the Aruch Hayim says. A very beautiful concept that comes through it, but we can see that this is unique. That's what I want to set the tone. And we're going to have to understand what's so unique, especially the word Kedoshim. That's a very important one. I just want to make sure of one thing if we did all the Rashi's. Just want to see on this Pasuk. And okay, so now I just want to go back. Sorry, we have to go back to page number one. Sorry to make you guys crazy, but page one, just for 1 second to see the second Rashi. Rashi tells us the word Kedoshim Tiyu. I just want to read this Rashi because we're going to see how does Rashi define you shall be holy. So Rashi says, what does it mean to be holy? So this is on page number one of your booklet. Kedoshim Tiyu, Hevu Prushim Min Harayis. Be removed from Arayis. Arayis are all kinds of immorality. Umin Ha'aveira, and from sin. As you see the word Prushim, removed. Separate. Keep yourself separate. Shekol mokim sha'atamay together. Wherever you find restriction of sexual immorality mentioned in the Torah, atamay tikdusha, you find holiness juxtaposed with it. And he goes on to explain that we see with the kohen how it's also that. Okay, so according to Rashi, we have an interesting thing. That this command of be holy is specifically talking about being holy so that you refrain from engaging in immoral acts, right? So stay away from immorality. Where does that come in here? So Rashi's really, in a sense, explaining it according to the way the Torah works, because the parasha before Parashas Kedoshim is Achrei Mos. And Achrei Mos, we read from that actually on Yom Kippur. Achrei Mos, very, very much in detail, gives us a lot of the halachas of what who people are allowed to marry, who people are not allowed to marry, as well as what type of behaviors you are allowed to engage in and what is forbidden. So all the different immoral acts that are forbidden. So here Rashi says, now the Torah is emphasizing and almost, if you want to say, closing that topic by telling us not only should you not do those, you know, immoral acts, but you should refrain, you should have kedoshim, you should like add an extra dimension. Be holy. How are you holy? By refraining. So it's giving it an extra dimension to all of what we have spoken about before. That's how Rashi explains it. There is a difference, a very, very famous different explanation, and that's the Ramban. So I'll just show you what page. So go to page number 6 in your booklets. This is a very, very, very famous Ramban. One of the most famous Rambans in the Chumash, actually. And I'll show you here on page 6. Okay, so it's on the top of page 6. It says, Ulefi Daiti. So now Ramban quotes Rashi, but he doesn't agree. He says, Ulefi Daiti, according to my opinion, Ein HaPrishus Hazu Lifroish Min HaRayos. It's page 6, yeah? So this separation, this abstinence, this separation is not just to separate from immorality, Kidivrei HaRav, as the words of Rashi, Aval ha'prishus hi hamuskeres b'chol makom b'talmud. What we are talking about is this separation which is mentioned many times all over through the Talmud, through the Mishnah, through the Gemara. Sheba'aleha nikra'im prushim. And the ones who master it are called prushim. Who are called prushim? A porush. It's actually a title of honor. What kind of a person is that? So let's see, the Ramban will explain. Who is a parush? He says, Va'inyin, ki ha-Torah zhira ba'aroya yisu b'machol ma'asurim. The Torah gave many things that they forbid us from doing, right? To warn us, so to speak, in immorality and food that's not... It's okay.
Sorry,
no problem at all. All good. Okay. Good morning. The Torah forbids us immorality and also forbidden foods, like not kosher foods. Ve'tira habia ish be'ishtar. But it did permit us to marry a man and a woman. So there are certain things that are forbidden, certain things which are permissible. and he says, Ish b'ishtay v'achilas ha'basar v'hayayin, even though we are forbidden from eating certain foods, but we are permitted to eat wine, drink wine, and eat meat, good meat, right? That we are permitted to do, as he said. So it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting contrast. That's what we're going to get to, I hope, today a little bit. In kein yimtza bal hataiva, what could happen is that you could find somebody who could be extremely indulgent. Makayim liyashotuf bezimas ishtay. So you could either be very indulgent in all kinds of sexuality, oy not nashavar, or many wives, it's still officially permissible. Vilias besayve yayin, you can be somebody who enjoys the best wines, bezaylele basar lamay, somebody who literally, you know, has the best cuts of meat. And we were laughing, me and Bela, we saw this ad for this restaurant in New York. Oh my gosh, you've never seen. We were just this kosher restaurant. This man was preparing this meat. I don't know, I've never seen anything like it in my life. And then they make this sandwich that's probably, I don't know how thick, and they prepare this meat for a month. It's salted and it's preserved and it's the best cut and you think, oh my gosh, and this is all kosher, of course, very kosher, you know. So it's just, you could do that. You can live for that too. And it's officially kosher, so it's all 100% okay. So this is the Ramban says, that's all very nice and good, but what kind of person? We're going to see an amazing language he uses. He says, and as he says, Vayidaber kirtzaynay b'chol ha'nevelis, and he could also speak in a very, how do you say it, in a very low manner. You know, some people do, whether they curse, whatever it is. They don't speak nicely, they don't speak refined, but they're not transgressing, they're not speaking Lashon Hara, or they're not whatever, speaking about idols, but they're speaking in a very unrefined manner. Shalai huskar isser zebetayra, that's not forbidden in the Torah. So therefore, we have a very important line that the Ramban says, what we can find, vihine yihyeh novel Bershus HaTaira, one of the most famous lines in the Ramban. You can have somebody who can be despicable within the parameters of halacha, of Taira. He could be keeping everything exactly as it says, but he's not a holy man. Definitely far from it. Despicable within the parameters. So according to the Ramban, what is Kedoshim? Kedoshim means be holy within what is permissible to you, not what is forbidden. What is permissible, and I'll show you the language. That's why he says Levichach ba'akosav. That's why the pasuk comes to tell us Achrei shapara ta'isurim. After it details all the things which are forbidden, she'asaraisam legamre, which we are totally forbidden from doing. Therefore, and he says v'tziva b'davra klali sheniye prushim min hamaisres, that we should be separate even from things which are permissible. And the language that's used is kadesh atzmecha b'mutarlach. Make yourself holy in what is permissible to you. A person should speak in a refined way, eat in a refined way. Everything they do should be in a refined way, with certain boundaries. This shouldn't be their focus, to be totally immersed and totally caught up in the physicality and in the materialism to the point where you're drowning in it. That's according to the Ramban, the mitzvah of Kedoshim to you. So it's a different explanation to Rashi, because Rashi was more about what's forbidden. He is saying what's permitted, but be careful, because that's a very, very gray zone. And it's very easy for a person not to even realize if they're not reflecting and become, unfortunately, caught up. And this is a very important principle, one of the famous principles of the Ramban. I'll just read you a drop more how the Ramban explains over here. V'gam yishmar piv, see, it's bracketed. V'gam yishmar piv l'shayna meizgal beribay achila yagasa. It's interesting how he puts it. A person should be careful with his mouth, that it shouldn't like stuff it with unrefined, like coarse food. Umin hadibur hanimas, and from disgusting talking. Gideon shehizkir akasav, like the pasuk says. In the prophets, he describes all the mouths that are speaking in a despicable way. He should sanctify himself with this achiyagil, the precious, until he reaches the point of what we called a parush, somebody who keeps themselves a little bit separate, refrains from indulging. Obviously, Rabbi Chiya was a very big tzaddik, and he reached a level that he never, ever in his life said one unnecessary word. Okay, that's a very, you know, a very high level, but we strive a little bit, but we do strive at least that whatever we will say should be said in the proper way, in an edel way. And that's why he also says, this is a general mitzvah, he says, because the idea of it being general is after he details all the things which are completely forbidden, he gives us a general attitude with which we are meant to do all of our mitzvahs. But not just mitzvahs, with which we are meant to live 24/7. That's what Kadesh means, Kedusha. That's what we're talking about here. Very, very powerful thing. I just want to see one more thing here. Let's just see a little bit more inside of some of the Mefarshim, and we have to understand how this works. This is a very interesting mitzvah. The reason I say we have to understand how it works is because we know that Jews are not, I don't want to compare, but you know, there's a very, you know, there's people in India who live in an ashram and separate themselves from the whole world, and all they do is meditate all day. That's not a Torah ideal. No, definitely not. That's not what we're meant to be doing, and that's not even respected. That's not what's respected. A person should go separate themselves from this world, from other people. No, definitely not. And yet, are we meant to be indulging in everything? No. So it's a very interesting balance. Actually, as a Jew, we have the hardest task. The hardest. It's much easier when things are absolutely forbidden. You know, it's a no-go zone, you don't do it. So if somebody tells you, for example, Shabbos, you know, with the phone, I always find, how come during the week we find it so difficult to put down our phone for an hour? Even an hour, and we say, we're not going to look, we're not going to answer. But Shabbos, 25 hours, nobody answers the phone, no problem. Why? Because we're forbidden. But during the week, it's permissible. And when it's permissible, it becomes much more challenging. And that's this mitzvah. This is one of the most challenging mitzvahs. Kadesh atzmacha b'mutarach. Just because you're allowed to answer the phone doesn't mean, I mean, or look at it or whatever it may be, doesn't mean we should be doing that. That's not what we're meant to be doing now, right? We can do much more productive things. This is a hard mitzvah. And that's what we're going to understand. I just want to see a few more beautiful mevarshim on the pasuk itself to see, again, the idea. So the Kliyokar, this is also on that same page 6, on the bottom. Kliyokar, he says, v'hikten l'parsha zu, inyan kedushas Yisrael. This is like an introduction to the whole parsha, the idea of the holiness of the Jewish people. Just like it says, again, it's so interesting, it's comparing it to the parasha that we're reading this week in the Torah. That what does it say before the giving of the Torah? You shall be for me a nation of priests, as we said, who is the holy ones? The Kayhanim. But we are all a nation of priests. V'goy kadesh, and a holy nation. So you see, we have that language there. So too, kach b'parsha zu, so too in our parsha. Nir mezu kol aseres hadibres, all the Ten Commandments are hinted, and even more than hinted, they're quite clearly stated. Kid'amar Rabbi Levi, as Rabbi Levi explains, al kain hikdim hakdusha, that's why he introduces the whole thing with the concept of holiness. L'chabe b'aleyan ha-mitzvahs, in order to make the mitzvahs precious to us. Laymarsh, to why? What is it? How does it make it precious to tell us? Sha'al yidehem yisku l'maylas haktusha. When we engage in doing mitzvah, so this is a little bit of a different slant. This is not so much in what you're permitted. This is even engaging in mitzvahs in the proper way. When we do mitzvahs, Hashem tells us a beautiful thing. We will merit to be on a level of holiness. He will grant us, He will refine us, He will give us some holiness, and we'll see from where. And then he says, "V'al taymar shakdusha milsa zutrusai ki kadeshani." You might think, "Oh, it's such a simple thing. Be holy, like oh, we could throw it around, just be holy." It's not a simple thing. We know it's not a simple thing. Who is holy? Hashem is holy. So he says, "Hakaten beinechem lidmas b'atzura liyitra." Is it so small in your eyes that the creation should be able to imitate the Creator, as we said that's what we're meant to do? But it's not an easy task. The only way we know we can do it is because Hashem tells us that he is our God and that he will help us and that he will grant it. Otherwise, it would be so removed from us. It would actually be impossible. But Hashem gives us this gift, and that's what he says. So I want to show you.
Sure. It just struck me that marriage is Kedusha.
Maybe.
Marriage.
Oh, yes, 100.
Yes.
Excellent, excellent.
Yes.
Sylvia, phenomenal. And we're going to see in a minute. Excellent. I think even
and
the Aruch HaYom HaKadosh.
I just wanted to add that.
Sure.
It's very different to the Catholic priest, you know, that the mountains were, they're not,
I know,
natural,
not allowed to.
Unnatural.
Exactly.
Don't you get the sugarness?
Yeah.
The shot, but yeah.
Exactly right. That's what we see again. It's a very interesting thing because, as I say, so a Jew gets married, but we have to be holy within marriage. We have Shabbos, and we're meant to have a cut of meat. You know, it says chicken, meat, fish, but in the right way. So it's very interesting. That's what makes it a little bit more challenging. But it's beautiful. You're right. If we can strike the balance, it's the most beautiful thing possible. And I'm giving away something beautiful, but I have to share something very nice that I saw. To me, it was like, it gave me such a clear way of looking at it, because you know how we're saying we have to compare ourselves to our Creator. It's exactly what Hashem does. Because Hashem, we say, he creates the world, and he finds himself obviously very close to us. He's constantly creating us, he's with us, and yet he's always separate. So he's in, but he's out. And that's the model we're meant to try and emulate. We'll see soon what that means. But there's the engaging and yet remaining above it. So it's a very interesting balance. But yeah, Kedushin is Kedusha. 100% very good. That's an amazing thing. Let's see. I want to show you the Aruch HaYom. So the Aruch HaYom HaKadosh is also on page 6 on the second column. It says, Ochein hanochein be'einayu, but what is correct in my eyes? Ki b'seid harishon lo yehoyim edabra moshe elalan. Okay, so it's continuing to what we said before about Kol Adas to the entire congregation. He says, V'kan siva Hashem sheyidaber l'chol Adas Yisrael, anoshim v'noshim v'taf. Right here, Moshe Rabbeinu has to speak to men, women, and children. K'seder shehoyu mekubatzim b'matan Torah, just the same way as when they were gathered by the giving of the Torah. Remember at Har Sinai, everybody together heard Hashem, men, women, children, Moshe, Aaron, everybody heard. The whole nation was gathered there, and in the same way in our parsha, that's what Hashem wants. And then he says, "V'yamarta aleihem tam shekeifa leimar v'yamarta." Okay, so we mentioned this. It says both v'yamarta and v'yidaber the same way as by the Aseres HaDibros. Now I want to show you one more thing. So if you go to the next paragraph, "Oid yirtze al ze haderech," I see there's no bracket there, but it's the third paragraph in the Aruch HaYom. Oy dear Tzalzer Zaderach, Kedoshim to you. It says a very beautiful thing. Kedoshim to you, you shall be holy. So he says it's Loshen Asid, it's future tense. What does that mean, it's future tense? Perush Ein Hefsek L'mitzvazu. There's no end. This is a mitzvah which is eternal, everlasting, but even more than that, constant. This is, in a certain way, it's because we have to constantly struggle with it. It's a constant, not struggle in a negative way, but it's something that we face constantly because we're in this world and we're dealing, you know, we're dealing with people that can challenge us. We're dealing with physical things that we're engaging in. So it's a constant mitzvah. It's a future mitzvah, if you want to say it's constant. As he says, Ein hefsik, there's no end to this mitzvah. Ki kol shar me'akdusha asher yikones, adayin yeshnoi begeder, Hachnosos shar acher lemaila mimenu. And this is another thing. Not only is it a constant thing that we have to face, but we never ever master it. Why? Because every gate of holiness that we enter, there's a higher gate. There's more that we can do. It's very beautiful in a way. I mean, even though sometimes it might seem daunting, but we can learn that the way, for example, let's say with speech. No matter how refined we think we speak to other people, there's still growth in that. We can speak more refined, whether it be to everybody or to certain people that we struggle with, whatever it may be. But there's always higher to go. There's always growth. There's always more. And why and how is that, he says? Ki ein shir lahadragas hakdusha. There's no limit. There's no limitation. And there's no amount to the levels of holiness. Hamzumen es l'chol ha-reitze, that's prepared for anybody who wants. Litol es Hashem, to actually, so to speak, if you want to say, to walk in that way. Which means why also? Because who are we talking about? Holiness comes from Hashem, and Hashem is infinite. So holiness is infinite. So we never master it totally. There's always growth. He says a beautiful thing. We can learn from the level of the Nevi'im, of the prophets. Zu l'mayla mizu, one higher than the other. Even amongst prophets who are really holy, because they obviously are holy, because they are able to hear the word of Hashem, which means that they definitely are not immersed in this world. They are separate. They keep themselves separate from the materialism and definitely from the negativity. That's why they're vessels to receive the godly spirit. Nevertheless, we see that even amongst prophets, there are levels. Umaisha Ayla al Gabe, and Maisha is the highest of all of them. Maybe we can say there's even a level higher than Maisha. And who is that? Vahu Madregas Malkeinu Mishichenu Hamutar Beitre Atares. Very beautiful language that Aruch Haim uses. This is the level of our king, Mishichenu, which is Mashiach, who is crowned with the crown of crowns. So Mashiach is even the highest level of holiness. We haven't yet merited to meet him, but he will reach the highest level of holiness. Kemuva mipasuk v'nocha olav ruach Hashem. It says in Yeshayahu that Hashem will rest upon him, so to speak, the Spirit of God will rest upon him. Uledivrei Rabbi Seinu ki Moshe shehayahu ha-goyela asid. Some people say it's Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the future Redeemer. As the Aruch Haim says, we've explained it over there. So he says, Imkein ein shiur gvul. The bottom line is, there's no limitation, there's no boundaries, there's no amount to the levels of holiness. And that's why we say this mitzvah is a constant mitzvah. And why is that, as we say? Because we are emulating Hashem. Let's see the next paragraph. Oid yirtze. That it gives us a reason why should we be holy? Because Hashem is holy. What does that mean? So he says, what does this mean that you should be holy because I am holy? How do we measure our holiness? According to Hashem's holiness. Oh, this makes it a little bit difficult. Okay, let's see how that works. Okay, so the Aruch Haim says, ki letzad, we are preparing ourselves that Hashem should rest his Shechina on our heads. In other words, we want to be the place where Hashem is with us. We always say Hashem is with us. And we know that. We say, we make a mishkan, a tabernacle, and Hashem rests. And where does Hashem rest now? In each and every one of us, in our hearts. It's not even now, even then. There's actually different of opinion. Some people say the reason Hashem could rest in the Mishkan was because he first rested within the Jewish people, in our hearts. And then he's able to rest in the Mishkan. So therefore, we want Hashem to rest within us. And therefore, what does that mean? So we have to estimate how holy is Hashem in order to prepare. Let's see. Let's understand what that means. A simple way that we can understand it. We don't compare. If you invite some simple person to come into your house, to when you invite a very special person. If you invite somebody who's who to come, we're going to be scrubbing and cleaning and preparing and getting the best of the best. The mattress will be the best. Everything will be perfect. That ordinary person off the street, okay, so we're not so sure everything's all right, it's fine. Imagine if we realize, if that's what we have to contemplate, that's what we have to reflect. We want Hashem, we're inviting Hashem to be within us. And who is Hashem, as the Aruch Haim HaKadosh says? Look how he says it so beautifully. He says, right? He says, Kal v'chaymer melech, and how much more so a king? Kal v'chaymer, b'noi shel kal v'chaymer melech hamlochem. Like, how much more so, if it's the king of kings? V'kal v'chaymer, you know, he says, Melech ha'ilam, the king of the world, asher lo yamlucha, to whom he has the whole, you know, he runs everything. Shekol masha yasa, dayin yeshna bekum ase. No matter what you've done up until now, there's still much more that you can do. Ki ein shir dai, because there's never enough, it's never, never enough what we've done. Lahatzrich asais, to what you have to do. That's why the pasuk finishes and says, because I, your God, is holy. Peirush ula erech kedushasi, and compared to my holiness, ani mitzaveh, I command you, shetachinu atzmechem, that you should prepare yourselves, b'chol yecholes hamusag, as much as you are able to. And I just want to extend that a drop more, because in Tanya, the Alter Rebbe explains very beautifully. So this, in a sense, is almost like sort of a heavy weight. It is. It's a little bit of an awesome kind of a thought that we are not only inviting, but it's almost like we don't really have a choice, because we're Jewish, you know, we have a neshama. And Hashem wants to be with us. It's almost like we might say, it is. It's like our parents. So you don't close the door to your parents. You want them to feel welcome and to come to you and to stay with you permanently in your house, not just as a simple guest, but as a permanent resident, so to speak. Obviously, we have to constantly be estimating the holiness of Hashem and how holy we must be. But the Alter Rebbe says what that can lead us, on one hand, you can be afraid, but on the other hand, imagine the great joy that we have. You know, the anticipation, you know, how when somebody special is coming, somebody you haven't seen for a while, somebody you really love, somebody who you really cherish, and you know that they're coming and they're going to stay with you, that incredible joy that you're filled with, that adrenaline and that high, that's what we're meant to feel every single day. That's how the Alter Rebbe says, because the truth is, that's what Hashem wants. He wants to be with us. He wants to be in our home. He wants to be within us. So we can see, in a sense, of the double side, the holiness is an estimation to how holy Hashem is, because the reason that we are holy, one of the main reasons that we have to make sure we are holy, is so that Hashem is comfortable with us. And that obviously has to be on His standard. So you can't invite somebody who's used to a 5-star hotel to the 1-star hotel. What's the point of that? They won't stay. So here we see. But the point also, as we say, is that who can be happier, who can be filled with more joy than being aware of who is Taket with you, who is there and who's comfortable to stay with you. So that's, I'm sorry, we didn't get to a lot of it, and Mirza Shah will continue next week.